GNC559. It's Tuesday, March 15th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proper of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, I'm back from Austin, actually in Silicon Valley. And boy, oh boy, we have a lot to talk about. Got a great show for you and some excerpts from South by Southwest. I think you guys are going to be excited about it. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right. I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of California via the Geek News Central portable studio overlooking Silicon Valley. Yes, I almost said Hawaii. Hey, everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, I want to welcome you to the Geek News Central podcast. And boy, I tell you, it's been a crazy, crazy week since I last spoke with y'all. And as you know, as I had promised, I was going to do a show from Austin. It didn't happen. And I must apologize. When I flew out of Honolulu on Wednesday evening, I had not upgraded my ticket, so I was stuck in coach. And the individual that sat beside me was, how should I say this politely, big. And he was half in my seat and half in his, and it turned out to be a very long flight to Denver. And then made the switch over and got into Austin with very, very little sleep. And really, I'd been up all day Thursday, then not getting sleep on the way out or very little sleep. And then by about 6:30, 7 o'clock that night, I hit the wall. And I must apologize to Greg. Greg was going to meet me. He had arranged to come out, and I felt bad, but I just couldn't do it. I simply collapsed and just couldn't do a show. Couldn't meet up with him. So many apologies to Greg, and hopefully next time things won't be so nuts. Of course, South by Southwest won't be going on, and I won't be under so much, hopefully not so much pressure. But anyway, we'll meet up again, and I'm definitely going to be spending a lot of time in Texas here over the next 6 months or so. Well, I want to welcome new listeners to the show. I want to welcome you, of course. Make sure you check out geeknewscentral.com and check out all the great content over there. You can check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. Of course, if you want to sign up for our newsletter, the newsletter contains everything I'm going to talk about during the show today, including all the links that listeners submit to the show. And if you have comments that you want to submit to the show, you can do so by sending in an email to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And really, I'm still, my butt's dragging. It's been, you know, I was being very careful not to overindulge at the evening parties and making sure that I got up early in the morning, but it still ended up being like, you know, 18, 19-hour days, and then flying out very early this morning to San Francisco. Made for a very short night last night, although I did sneak a little nap this afternoon. but I wanted to get a show out tonight, obviously having missed one on Thursday of last week. But I'm going to be here in the Valley for the rest of the week and still planning on doing the meetup on the evening of the 19th. Haven't decided a place or a location yet, but probably somewhere in San Jose. So if someone has an idea on where to meet up on Friday night, let's plan on doing that and wait to every, you know, try to work it into a time where after everyone's off work. I'm going to be pretty flexible on Friday. I've actually opened that schedule up quite open. I fly back to Dallas on Saturday. And then I'm going to be in Texas for the, I think the next the next week or so. So that's the plan going forward here. So I'm going to be on the road for a couple of weeks, and all the shows are going to be on the road. So tonight we're streaming with our little mini Logitech camera, not the nice big HD camera like it is when I'm in home in Honolulu. So a little different vibe for the show and the show video. So let me just kind of talk a little bit about, let me scroll up here on the page, on my little notes page, make sure that I've talked a little bit about South by Southwest. The interactive portion of the show, they said there was 30,000 attendees. And my kind of my thought was when I went that I would be able to, and I had shipped out a high-def camera. As a matter of fact, I've got some videos that were shot. I did an interview with Ford and Chevy. But really, after we did a one or two times through the trade show floor, there really wasn't any companies that I really wanted to interview on the trade show floor. The folks from Popbox were there, talked with them, went to their party. They threw a great party. I want to thank them for that. But other than that, really, I thought there would be more opportunity just to do some camera stuff on attendees. But, you know, I ran into probably 20 to 30 people that I knew in the space. And, you know, besides, hey, how you doing? Glad to see you again. Hope everything's well. You know, everyone was pretty busy going between conferences and schedules and sessions. So really, there was a lot of time to chit-chat with people and do a lot of great networking in the halls, there wasn't, per se, a lot of time to really do interviews, per se. So I banded the camera on Saturday and Sunday, did a few blog posts, nothing in-depth, but I got some stuff I want to share with you tonight that I recorded from the Mark Cuban / CEO of Boxy. I think his last name's Avener. I forget his first name. Some of their discussions before the fire alarms go off. So I'm going to play that back. That was recorded from my seat. I cannot play you the whole session. I have to be careful not to go beyond what I'm allowed to use for allowable use on this. But I'm going to play you some of that during the show tonight so you get a feel for what happened in that session, and we'll have a discussion about that. But overall, for $600 for people paying for a pass to go to Interactive, wow, I'd really have to consider it hard whether or not I would go back another year at this point. Just the networking the parties at night were strictly parties. Usually parties at conventions are such that you're able to do a little business, have a little discussion, but every party was, music was loud, of course, free drinks, poo-poos to eat, and really not good networking because they were open to everyone and you didn't know who was who. And there was no pitching at any of the parties so that you would get an idea of who the hosts were. So it was a bit of a challenge. And even though I went to, I guess the best networking I did was at the Blip party. The Blip party was quiet. The folks from Blip were very accessible, very noticeable who they were by wearing Blip shirts. And we had a great conversation with some of the Blip hierarchy, had some great discussions with their COO and CFO. So I think there's some synergy there. Went to the Popbox party, and while we had talked to them on the show floor, it was nice to go and catch up with them. But the Mashable party and the, what else? Well, I guess there was good networking at the Ustream party. But definitely, age-wise, I was definitely on the upper end of the attendees so far as age goes. And matter of fact, Jeff Hines, who's our content director at Raw Voice, him and I were talking about, man, don't you feel old by by all these young? And it really was. It was a 20, early 20s to mid 30s was the really the kind of prime age. And everyone was grouped up in their own little groups. There wasn't a lot of this going on. But I did take one word of advice. So every time I got near somebody and we were standing still for more than 15 seconds, I said, hello, how you doing? Introduced myself. And I found that was very effective in meeting new people, made some great contacts that way, just because people don't say hello. I don't know what it is with, you know, I would have to drag it out of people. Hi, what's your name? You know, what do you do? And, you know, what are you getting out of the show? You know, there was none of this. It would have to just kind of pull it out of them. And I really am not used, I'm used to having this good two-way conversation, meeting with people at parties, and there's just this, you know, it's good networking. And while they say the networking in the hallways is good at South by Southwest, it's much, much better at CES. Much better. From a business standpoint. Social media-wise, some of the sessions were good, some of them were not so good. I had some that were purely pitches. So that was my, really, it just pissed me off, to be honest with you, going into a session and expecting to get information on, okay, like for one session, it was about advertising and videos and where we're headed. And it was some company that was pitching a widget that they were making for micropayments. There was some other sessions I could have went to that I found out later I wouldn't have got pitched at. So I out of all the sessions I attended, and I probably attended 3 to 4 a day, I walked out of 3 because they end up being a pitch for a product or service. And if they would mark them sponsored or, you know, so that you would know exactly what you were getting into, it wouldn't be so bad. But most of those sessions, people were leaving in droves. And I hope that South by Southwest gets a handle on that for sure. So other than that, good. I love Austin. Austin's a beautiful city. Lots to do. Very vibrant. It was really good. A little pricey on the hotel. I think the staying from Thursday night through Monday morning, hold on to your hat, was $900 for the hotel. So they really stick it to you hard. My hotel bill, and I had a suite in Vegas, was under $1,000, and that was for 8 days. So they really hammer you on hotel cost in Austin for that week or for that short time frame. I can't imagine what staying the whole length of the show would be. Now, Jeff, he's going to stay for the film and music, and actually he was texting me today and had 4 or 5 great conversations that I wish I would have been there for with people that I wanted to see the first 2 or 3 days that we just didn't run into. So anyway, he's there on the ground, and he's going to be there all week, and he's going to have a great time, of course. So anyway, here in Silicon Valley for the rest of the week, and then back to Texas. Got stickers and swag for people. If you want to get some stickers and swag for me, all you have to do is send a self-stamped addressed envelope to Geek News Central, and I'll have that address in the show notes. They go out in the newsletter, and you can send that out. And when I get back, I'll send you back some stickers and swag from the stack of stuff I have at home. So send those envelopes out to me, and we'll get you some swag. Salary placement plan. I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I actually thought about it during one of the sessions because it kind of covered, you know, ways to essentially generate revenue, and talked about specifically this plan of, you know, people donating to the show. And one thing that one of the presenters, matter of fact, Darren at Daring Fireball, did is he had it. So if you contributed a certain amount a year, you'd get a free T-shirt. And I thought that might be kind of a cool idea. So we might consider doing that. I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on that as well. You know, if you give a little something, get a little something, and it still benefits the show here. I want to make sure you check out the free magazine orders. And those of you that checked out the iPod Secrets offer that I put up on the website, hey, thanks for picking that up. That definitely helps the show out quite a bit as well. Of course, GoDaddy.com, longtime sponsor here. And when you get over to GoDaddy and you're looking for a hosting account, dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, or any one of the other great, fabulous products they have over there, when you get to the checkout counter, don't forget your geek here at Geek News Central. You can pick up, actually save a lot of money through using my promo codes. And the promo codes are linked, by a link on the website at geeknewscentral.com, the second column. Todd will save you 10% on your orders, non-domain orders. Todd20 will save you 20%. ComSale will get you .coms at $7.49. Aloha will save you $20 on orders $75 or more. That Todd20 code, Todd20, will save you 20% on a 1-year shared hosting account. And thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here at the show. So let me go ahead and make sure that I have all my stuff done. And those of you that have picked up something from Audible, hey, thanks so much for that. And if you haven't checked out Audible, there's a banner on the website. Click through on that. If you decide to do the free trial, we appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. Okay. What I should do is preface this next. Get right into the content here. Preface this next commentary with a little bit of background before we start. Before I start the video for you. And first, I guess I should mention as well. For those of you that are on the Eastern Seaboard that have gotten hit pretty hard with this bad weather, thoughts and prayers are with you guys. I know many in New England are having major flooding issues, and I didn't realize how bad it was until I was basically catching up on the news today and the terrible wind that you've had there. So, you know, my heart goes out to all of you if you're affected by that. So hope that you guys are safe. We'll get power back and back online here soon, and hopefully no damage to your house and property. All right, let me go ahead and talk a little bit about this debate that happened between Mark Cuban and Abner from Boxy. His name is Abner Rosin, and they basically were talking about what we've talked about many times on this show, being able to get television where and how we want it. And that would be anything from mainstream television shows delivered over IP to being able to go a la carte and picking up a variety of channels one by one. And I'm just going to go ahead and play, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes of this at the most, because I've got a lot of regular content to go tonight. And this is recorded from the almost three quarters of the way back, and I was using my my Zoom H4N to record this. But I think you'll notice right from the very beginning, you're going to hear me laugh a little bit about the banter these two had. And then it was rudely interrupted by a fire alarm halfway through. But I'm going to play the first portion of this, and you guys will get a feel for what these two were talking about, and then we'll talk a little bit about it after I stop the playback, and then we'll get into the rest of the content tonight. So let me go ahead and play this.
Just as stupid as New York.
I see. So, you know, if you have, like, this, you know, both Time Warner and Cablevision, which have between them 18 million subs that don't get HNet, why not offer HNet online?
Because we have 16 million subs who do get HNet, watch it regularly, and something I'm sure you haven't heard of, but they pay us. Yeah. They pay us money.
Yeah.
And you know what else? Profitable. We make money.
Yeah.
Do you want me to explain that concept to you?
Yeah.
See, in the business world, it always works better. Some companies think you win when you raise money.
Yeah.
But no, that's not how it works.
You learned that at broadcast.com, right?
Oh, no, see, we had sales. I'll tell you this, though. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'll bet you we did more sales in one quarter of broadcast than you've done in the history of Boxy, and that's $19.99.
Yeah, that's not, you know, we have $0 in revenue.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. How much money did you lose in broadcast.com?
When you
took it public?
I think we lost 1.7 our last quarter, which is probably less than you're losing now. And we're actually break even the first quarter we got bought by Yahoo. So, and you know, we actually had a real business. You see, there's a lot of people who would like to bag on broadcast.com, and that's fair, because Yahoo killed it. So I don't mind, because I laugh all the way to the bank, so you can bag all you want. But the reality is, what we were doing in 1995, 96, 97, 98, 99, and actually April 1st, 11 years ago is when we sold it to Yahoo, is what YouTube and Google are doing today. You know, we were doing things like Breakfast with Dell, where Michael Dell would sit down in a room and interview one of his clients. And then imagine, they do it in digital video with a little HD, not HDV, but DV camera. And then they upload it themselves, coordinate the slides to it, and then anybody can come in and watch it. And they could register or not register. Then we bought this company, SimpleNet, that specialized in user-uploaded video in 1999. But you know where we really made our money? We really made our money doing broadcasts. What we sold, when we do radio stations and sporting events and concerts, that was all proof of concept that allowed us to build our network.
Right, because we didn't have the rights for it, right?
No, we had all the rights.
Not initially.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Well, when you took it off the satellite and just broadcast it?
No, we wouldn't put it up there without rights. We're not YouTube, we're not Google. We actually go out and get rights. So you guys didn't get that. But in any event, where we made our money was in selling the value of real-time communications. So back in the mid-90s, if Motorola or Intel wanted to introduce the Pentium to date the whole thing. See what happens when I'm kicking them. Your butt, right?
I asked them when you're going to this monologue. Just to stop.
Look, bottom line is broadcast.com.
And emergency if they were forced. All walked the nearest stairway exit. Do not use the elevator. Walk to the nearest stairway. Do not use the elevator. Walk to the nearest stairway.
Oh, this is so wrong.
Yep.
Well, you can see what happened. Anyway, they were only into the conversation about 4 minutes, but they were already pretty much at their throats, and it went on like that after we got back from the fire alarm for probably another hour. And basically the conversation boiled down to this. Mark says that in order to get, let's say, for example, just HDNet available to be seen over the internet, he needs at least 500,000 subscribers a month from a service, and he has to be guaranteed X number of revenue per month on those 500,000 subscribers. He actually offered the CEO of Boxy essentially book rate for getting HDNet available to be streamed over the internet, or actually available over the internet through a service, if he could guarantee 500,000. And they shook on that, which I thought was pretty remarkable. So now it's up to someone to see if they can find 500,000 subscribers willing to pay a couple bucks a month at least to get HDNet over the internet. Now the challenge with that is that Cuban doesn't seem to think that 500,000 people streaming HD over the internet can be supported by the current available broadband capability that we have from our internet service providers. So Mark has posted a rebuttal, I guess, on his website that goes into some more of his discussion that him and Avner Rosin had at South by Southwest, and I hope that you'll read that. What I may do is I may make the audio recording that I have, the two pieces of that, available on a select basis to maybe some of you that would like to listen to the whole hour, because I did record the second half of it, but I can't put it here in the context of the show. But maybe I can do it for our maybe premium subscribers of the podcast and make that available for you. And those would be those that are doing ongoing contributions to the show. But anyway, this. And I'm sure at some point the whole presentation will be available by the South by Southwest folks as well. I'm sure they're going to put it up. But here's the question that we're all going to have to ask ourselves. If we all want our television content delivered to us via IP, is it reasonable to think that our internet service providers are going to allow that to happen? And anyway, enough on that conversation. You guys can see a lot of chat about this across the internet from the people that were there. But these two went back and forth for, again, a good part of an hour and 30 minutes and answered questions. It got pretty heated as well. Again, I'll make that available up later on, I guess, and I'll let you guys know when you can pick it up. So we'll move on from there, but I hope that just gave you a taste. But you can tell how the audience was disappointed when the fire alarm went off. I had thought that maybe someone had called in a bomb threat, but it turned out to be it was just a false alarm. But it sure did disrupt stuff for about 20 minutes. Let's go ahead and move into the rest of the content for the show here. And I hope I didn't give you too little of a taste of that, but those two, again, battled back and forth for an hour. And some people thought it was a little bit of an ego play on each of their parts, but I think they both had good points throughout. All right, over on Tech Dirt, a judge in Spain has ruled, once again, that peer-to-peer is legal. So, again, Spain continues to be one of the few countries out there that seems to not have its judges lose their, you know, their thinking ability the second anyone mentions privacy or copyright violation and so forth. So the judge has ruled that peer-to-peer, at least in Spain at this point, is not illegal. Microsoft, of course, has announced that with their upcoming their phone release, that they as well are going to have a app store, and they are going to be monitoring and restricting which type of apps get approved, and it'll be exclusively through a Microsoft-managed store. And you would think after Apple has gotten beat up so bad that they would have learned that, hey, maybe we shouldn't follow the same footsteps as Apple has done, but maybe they won't have an issue because maybe there won't be as many apps put forth as as the iPhone store. So maybe it'll be more manageable. Hey, do you want to add here something? Today I spent some time at the Apple store, not the Apple store, at the Sprint store. I don't know. Oh, I got it over on my bed. The U301 3G/4G modem that I have with Sprint. Two thumbs down. It died. So they've ordered me a replacement, and they're going to deliver it to a Sprint store locally here that I'll be able to pick up on Wednesday. But I don't think there's any 4G in this neck of the woods where I'm at specifically. So, but I couldn't get even on 3G. So tonight we're streaming the podcast with Verizon, and it seems to be hanging pretty good. So that's good. But yeah, my Sprint U300 card died. I'm kind of happy it died because I hate that card. So they're going to replace it with a U301. We'll see if it does any better. Hey, we're on Gizmodo. They have got a pretty cool device they've linked up to. How many of you have seen these cutting boards that have an angle off the actual cutting board surface where they have a magnet embedded and you just put your knives up against that and it'll store your knives for you? Someone has come up with a pretty ingenious way to make that a little more palatable for those of you that have, you know, your kitchen's laid out real nice and different types of wood textures. You actually can use one that actually has the magnet built into the wood structure itself. So pretty cool little stuff here. This is just a little gadget item that they produced over on Gizmodo. I'll have that link up for you in the show notes. Article over on New Scientist at newscientist.com talks about Terminator asteroids and how they could reform after being nuked. Of course, there's been a long-going discussion on if we were going to be struck by an asteroid, would we be able to essentially intercept it with a nuclear weapon, destroy the asteroid, and basically prevent our fate from being, you know, being going the way of the dinosaur. And what scientists have figured out is if they were to nuke a 1 kilometer across asteroid with too small of a nuclear weapon, what would end up happening was that after a few hours, between 2 and 18 hours, the largest pieces of that body, because of the natural gravitation of the asteroid itself, would actually coalesce back together and really come down as almost the same size piece of rock. And that's pretty scary stuff. So what they did is they went to a much deeper study and found that as long as the escape velocities of the material is great enough, the natural gravitation won't pull the rocks back together. And what they figure they'll have for a 1 kilometer across asteroid is a 900 kiloton nuclear weapon. 900 kiloton nuclear weapon. Wow. And they say that is well within our capacity. Pretty scary stuff when they're talking in weapons that big to destroy an asteroid. But it is interesting that they're doing this study, and they've actually figured out what they're going to need to do to break up one of these bad boys so that it doesn't end up being a life-ending event for those of us on Earth. So, yeah, if we're going to be going after an asteroid, we're definitely going to be sending some heat up there. Wow, they just got to get enough that scatter big enough that it's not pulled back together. So very cool information from the folks over at NewScientist.com. Over on Robin Good's website at masternewmedia.org, he's got a good article about website usability testing. He's got a guide to the best professional usability testing tools and services. And this is more important than ever with HTML5. Matter of fact, I attended a couple of HTML5 sessions at South By, and there's exciting stuff coming. There really is. And I was actually sitting beside a guy that does web development. I says, this is going to put a lot of web developers out of job. And he's like, oh, no, this is not. Folks, HTML5 and the simplicity of the embeds, you don't have to be a programmer to do a lot of the stuff that is being done with JavaScript now. You'll be able to really, it's really simple. I mean, it's dramatically simple. And it's going to revitalize what, or reduce the amount of utilization you have to have for a web developer when the HTML5 spec is finally put together. Now, there is a draft HTML5 spec out, 900 pages long. I don't recommend that. There is a short version that you can read, 20 or 30 pages, that gives you kind of the 1, 2, 3 of what the HTML5 spec is bringing to the table. But cool stuff. But anyway, Robin Good has this good usability. You can make sure all your websites work with a variety of browsers. And so anyway, I have this linked up for you. You can check out. And actually, usability is so far as the for handicaps goes, it was also a big discussion point at South By. And these testing applications that they have here will help you make sure that your site has a higher usability level as well. Over on Hacker News, they have done something extraordinary. And I'm pretty surprised that they did it. But they have, Hacker News is a service of Y Combinator. They have just blocked every search engine from indexing their website. They basically blocked Yahoo, Google, MSN, everyone that does any type of indexing. They have set in their base directories of their sites basically listed in a banned robot file. You don't index here, and so they're blocking robots from spidering their websites, and wanting to go alone. They don't want this content that's being in there indexed. Now that isn't, some users are not happy about it, but it's a pretty bold move to block completely all search engines. It makes you want to go over there and look and see what they're talking about. But definitely a bold move by those folks over there. Hey, someone jumped into the chat room here. Alt-Dale said, hey, Todd, raved a little late to catch the show. Is the meetup still on for Friday, and has the time and location been decided? Yes, the meetup's still on for Friday, and no, a location has not been decided. Dale, if you want to pick one in San Jose, let's pick me one in San Jose, and we'll go for that. I'm easy peasy, and so I'll eat anything. So whatever you pick, that's where we'll go. How about that? Does it sound like fun? Over on Doc Searle's weblog, and let me turn this. Are you guys getting blown out on Ustream? Is the audio too high? Anyway, Doc Searle's has got a post entitled "Futures of the Internet," and earlier this year, the Pew Research Center Internet and American Life Project and the Elon University conducted research toward the future of Internet 4 with their latest survey series, which began with the future of the Internet number one in 2004. And here is a pretty interesting list on questions they asked. And you can go through, and I'll have the link up to Doc Searle's weblog post. But here's the questions they asked. Number one, will Google make us stupid? And I think to a certain extent, they have made us stupid. I very rarely now do I, I don't even try to remember an address or certain things. I just go out and Google it. Number two, will we live in the cloud or on the desktop? I think we're going to live a little bit on both. What do you guys think? Will social relations get better? Based upon what I saw at South By, I think it's going to get worse. A really dramatic difference in the way socially, not at all things, but I do think there was a little bit of a, it's just not as open and people willing to discuss things. So we'll see. Will the state of reading and writing be improved? I definitely think writing will degrade with everyone wanting everything in 140 characters now. I don't know if necessarily if it's going to affect reading. Well, those in the Gen Y, basically those Gen Yers, will they share as much information about themselves as they age? That's a good question. So will Generation Y do that? Will they share more information? Will our relationships to key institutions change? Number 7, will online anonymity still be prevalent? Number 8, will the semantic web have an impact? Number 9, are the next takeoff technologies evident now? And number 10, will the internet still be dominated by end-to-end principle? Which I'm not sure exactly what they mean by that. I'll have to go and look up what they mean by end-to-end principle. There must be a definition for that. But the results are up, but I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on any one of these points. And Doc goes into, boy, he writes a heck of an article here. And he reviews his thoughts and where we're at and where we're going. So I'll have this up for you. This is probably the read of the night. I spent probably 10 minutes going through this. Great post by Doc Searles, and probably, again, my recommended read of the evening. I remember that knucklehead, that pervert that was filming the nude sportscaster. Well, he's got 30 months in prison to think about his taping of her, and he's ordered to pay $7,300 in restitution to the sportscaster. You know, that's, can you believe that? He's only going to have to pay $7,366 in restitution to her. Now, I'm sure there's going to be a civil hearing on this. But the lawyers had initially pushed for a restitution to be set at $335,000. But you got to feel for this gal. You know, he posted that up on the internet, and that has made its rounds. And talk about a violation of privacy. And he's only got to pay $7,300 in fines, and he's getting 30 months. So what do you guys think? What do you guys think of the sentence? Do you think it's enough? Do you think that it's fair? I don't know. You know, you put yourself in the shoes of being a father and that being your daughter. No, 30 months, not enough for me. So I guess it all depends on what the rules are, sentencing rules on this type of thing. But I'm shocked it's as small as it is, and the restitutions are as small as it is. Hey, big debate that's going on. A lot of websites talking about it. You know, if you're working for Microsoft, it's probably not a good idea to have a iPhone on your desk when Steve Ballmer comes walking around. You know, you'd probably want to put that in your desk and, you know, just turn it off. Or you go to a public, you go into the Microsoft campus, you have your iPhone out. It's probably not a good idea. But the question is being asked by a lot of websites, and the one over on CNET says, should Microsoft employees openly use the iPhones? And I perfectly feel that you should, you know, you're going to have a product, you better use it. You look at Geek News Central. Geek News Central is hosted on a GoDaddy server. Geek News Central's podcast is hosted by Raw Voice and our Blueberry CDN podcast hosting service. I use our PowerPress plugin. I use our tools. I use our products and services. I don't go over and use a competitor's products and services. I use what we have available. And I would probably be pretty upset at any of my team members if they were using a competitor's product. I'd probably say, you know, what are you doing? You don't believe in the product and service? Do you really want to work here? And so I think that, if you work at Chevy, you're definitely not going to have a Ford in the parking lot. I wouldn't think, would you? I don't know. What do you guys think? Does Microsoft have a right to... Dale, you live 90 miles away from San Jose. I'll have to pick the place. Don't worry. I'm looking at chat on Ustream, folks. Sorry about that. I don't know. does your company, do you use your company's products and services? And if a competitor has a product and service, do you hide it? Or does your company have a policy? Love to hear what you guys think. GeekNews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Make an adjustment here on the console so I can see what's going on. Good. Over on Wired, at South by Southwest, Dig announced their redesign, and they did it. I didn't even attempt to go over to where they were having their big blowout party because it was, I guess the line was like 500 feet long for people to get into just for a few free drinks. Sorry, not going to do it. But Dig is offering a glimpse of its new website design, and they have really, boy, tore this thing up and changed it completely. And it's going to have more emphasis on the person, the individuals that are submitting articles than those that are always digging articles. So they say every single thing has changed. The entire website has been rewritten. The new dig.com is still, of course, in pre-beta, but Dig users can sign up to test a new version by visiting new.dig.com. And invites are going to trickle out over the next couple of weeks, and the redesigned website will launch sometime in the next few months. Pretty radical change for the site, and they go into deep deep review of what's changed. And having not been a real active Dig user, as soon as I can get in there and see it, I'll let you guys know what I think. But based on the write-ups, it's really going to be focused on social media. One of our good contributing editors over at Geek News Central wrote up an article, talking about Foursquare and Gowalla. Now, those of you that are on Foursquare, you'll definitely want to follow me because I'm using Foursquare as well, checking in wherever I'm at. You guys can kind of follow me around if you're a Foursquare user. Did not load the Gowalla app just because I don't need another app to check into someplace. So I kind of am already started to be vested in Foursquare, but it was definitely the talk of South by basically who has the best tool, the best check-in tool, and the best social tool when it comes to the types of things that you do with Foursquare or Gowalla. I'll leave it up to you guys to figure out which one you like the best. Maybe you guys can convince me which way I should go, one way or the other, if I should switch midstream here. But right now, Foursquare and Gowalla are basically in a pretty much a statistical dead heat for user base. And there's definitely a lot at stake here. And I think that the Foursquare people really have to get aggressive because just like anything else, if another company comes up with better services and or better functionality, they could be in trouble. Now, the biggest problem I've been having with Foursquare is they are definitely having scaling issues because there are times that I can't check into places because it has it's either timed out or there's too heavy usage. So what do you guys think? Let me know what you think between the two different apps, those of you who have iPhones. All right, over on Slashdot, China to connect its high-speed rail to Europe. I think this is pretty cool on a technology front. But China has the most advanced, extensive high-speed rail lines in the world, and soon that network will connect it all the way into Europe and the UK. Initial negotiations and survey have already been done. China is now making plans to connect its HSR line through 17 other countries in Asia and Eastern Europe in order to connect existing infrastructure to the EU. Additional rail lines will also be built into Southeast Asia as well as Russia, and what will likely become the largest infrastructure project in history. They hope to get it done within 10 years, and with China providing the financing exchange for raw materials in some cases. Well, you know where they're getting their financing, right? It's, partly the money they're making out of that, all the interest they're earning off the money that we borrowed. Oh, so the treasury bills that China bought, I guess that's a better way to say it, and the interest they're making off those. In 1985, when the domain name system was first implemented, this is a pretty big milestone here. So if you look at the time that has progressed, of course, now there's a huge number of domain names that are have been registered. And actually, I have a link here for you a little later in the show that talks about that. Actually, there's a press release out by GoDaddy on the anniversary of the first .com that was purchased. But on the 15th of March, which is today, the 25th anniversary of the first day the .com was registered, over 250 million websites, and there are over 80 million active .com sites. And, you know, what were some of those first .coms that were registered? The very first one was Symbolics.com, Symbolics.com, then BBN.com, Think.com, MCC.com, Deck.com, Northrop.com, Xerox.com, HP.com, Bellcore.com, IBM.com, Sun.com. So you see all these pretty familiar names, right? And you look down, I'm looking down the list here, and from 15 March 1985 to 30 November 1987 is how long it took to get to 100 domain names being registered. Now, I registered my first domain name in, it would have been 84 to 87, 91 and 94, probably about 1992. And, you know, thinking back, and the first domain I registered was hafadai.com, H-A-F-A-A-D-A-I.com. And I don't know what number in the domain scheme it was registered, but it was when I was living in Guam. And I think back now, and, you know, it's still, even, you know, a few years after I registered that first domain, which was very expensive to register at that time, you think about if we had all had foresight, of course, none of us did, we would have all purchased .coms. Of course, it was very hard to buy a .com, too. You had to have a service to go along with it. They just didn't give you a .com and let you park it at the time. So just think of all the domains you could have bought and been rich. You know, hindsight being 2020, you definitely would like to go back to the mid-80s when all this was going on, because you could have set yourself up for life by just picking up a few domain names. But the first one was Symbolics.com. Again, these are on .com, not .edu's or anything like that. So I think there was some before that that were actually .edu. Okay, some criticism. Former NASA astronauts who have went to the moon have told the BBC of their dismay at the president's decision to push back future moon missions. Jim Lovell, commander of the ill-fated Apollo 13, said that the president's decision would have catastrophic consequences for the U.S. space exploration. And I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Do you think that the criticism is deserved? Haven't got any feedback. I've asked this a couple of times. Geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Is the criticism warranted, or do you think we should be spending money differently than what the president wants with the new space plan? All right, the FCC has formally announced, at least to review, its national broadband plan. The FCC's broadband plan is, they're planning on spending $15.5 billion for deployment. The plan calls for a nationwide free or low-cost wireless broadband across the entire United States in 10 years. And the FCC will recommend the deployment of, again, a nationwide free or low-cost wireless broadband network. And their hope is to have affordable 100 megabit per second service available to 100 million U.S. homes during the same time frame as well. They want Congress to fund a nationwide wireless broadband network for emergency response at a cost of about $12 to $16 billion. This is in addition to what they're spending on top of the other broadband plan. And the national broadband is a 21st century roadmap to spur economic growth. They're asking television stations across the United States to give up another 120 megahertz of spectrum over the next 5 years, and they're going to reallocate it to wireless broadband providers in a voluntary program that would allow the stations to share or keep spectrum auctions revenues. So in other words, if they sell some of their spectrum, they actually get to keep the money from that. So that'd be a big boon to those that hold those spectrum spaces in the TV space. So that could be encouraging for that group of, you know, that multi-billion dollar industry right now that's hurting pretty bad. So pretty cool. Something up with, I think, has got great merit. Have a link up in the show notes. Of course, you can check out the full PDF on this. It's been released by the FCC, and you can go through this in greater detail. I haven't read the entire PDF yet. I'm just taking some highlights. The folks over at Computer World have a 3 to 5 page review of what the FCC is recommending, and that probably will give you a good summary if you just want to check that out. Hey, if you've got a Dish TV, you may be getting searched soon. Google is doing some testing. They're doing an Android-based satellite set-top box with Dish Network that has basically on-screen searching, which is pretty cool. Basically, be able to search a Dish Network TV programming and hopefully make it easier to find programs that you're looking for instead of click, 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 like we all do trying to find programs that we want to set up for our DVRs. Google is predicting that mobile ad rates will pass PC rates. In other words, what you what it costs advertisers to advertise on websites that we see on our PCs. But they're saying that the companies pay for search ads on mobile phones could surpass the rates of its existing PC-based ad business thanks to the growing popularity of powerful smartphones. Do you really think I'm going to click on ads in my phone when I am already limited in bandwidth? Do you think I'm really going to do that? I don't click on ads that necessarily pop up now on websites. Why do you think ads are going to be any better on a smartphone? Do you guys, if any of you, please, if we got a huge audience here, okay? The audio audience of this show has continued to grow. We're probably going to bust 150 very, very soon, 150,000. So what I want to hear, this is a little straw test here. Have you clicked on a ad in your phone, in one of those little pop-up ads? Have you actually clicked on one? If you have, send me an email. Just say, Todd, yes, I clicked on an ad in your mobile phone. I want to see how many emails we get, okay? And I'll give you guys a tally on the next show. I know most of you don't click on ads on websites, let alone in your phones. Hey, can you even see those little ads? I can't. You know, well, I can, but I don't. I don't click on them. Another thing, too, is with the iPad coming, and yes, I did order one for myself, and primarily I need it to make sure that we're set and ready to go with Raw Voice and our websites, that make sure compatibility is there. But, of course, our winner, Big Odie, his is ordered as well, so he'll be getting his on April 3rd. How many of you ordered iPads? And come on, tell me if you did. If you ordered the ordered one, I'd like to hear from you. But what I'll probably end up doing is passing mine once I mess with it for a little bit to our developers and let them use it as a development device. So have you guys ordered your iPad? Did you order one? Did you give in to temptation? I guess I did. Okay. The announcement by Twitter at South by Southwest, according to everyone, was a big yawner. No one is like really excited with what they are doing. Now, the only thing I think is cool is they're going to be announcing, or actually it's called it At Anywhere platform. And what that's going to do is this At Anywhere platform is going to allow web publishers like myself to embed Twitter feeds deep inside my content. And if you encounter one of these things within the website, you'd be able to tweet about the story without having to go over to Twitter. So you just click, and it gets tweeted. So this will keep you on the website without letting you or forcing you to go somewhere else. So I think it's pretty cool, but it definitely wasn't anything major. Now, here's the thing that is pretty sad. Now, Twitter had a very big opportunity today to really get some good press, and instead, the large majority of the audience was walking out on the keynote within about 5 minutes of him starting to speak, when he really didn't announce anything remarkable. And, you know, they didn't say they were going to be announcing anything remarkable, but they definitely got the hype machine, the press did. They got the hype machine spun up. Apple has filled in some of the iPad blanks, and one of the blanks people want to know is Microsoft Exchange support. And Apple has said, yes, iPad will work with Exchange for email, as does the iPhone and iPod Touch. They're also going to have Microsoft Word export support, which is good. So the $10 iWork page app for the iPad will let you export, not just import documents in the Word format. Apple had originally said that the optional iWork app for documents, numbers for spreadsheets, and Keynote would only import documents, but now they're going to import and export. So this is a little bit better for those of you that are Windows users that want to basically stay within the Word or Microsoft Office utilization by, you know, basically get documents in and out of the device. They should just support Word and Excel, I think, natively. You know, don't make me have to import and export documents. The international partners of the International Space Station have agreed to an extension. Partner nations, the International Space Station project affirmed Thursday their desire to keep operating the station at least till 2020 while studying the possibility of further extensions. This, you know, this only makes sense that they would do this. Members concluded that there are no technical constraints to keep flying the International Space Station to at least 2020, and the agencies are studying certification of an on-orbit elements of the station through 2028, and this would be 30 years after the launch of the first station. Can you imagine that? Okay, that's amazing that we're already 12 years into the International Space Station's life. It doesn't seem like that long, does it? But anyway, they're looking for feasibility going out to 30 years. All right, Apple has hired a wearable computing expert. In other words, it's a scientist that has been hired to design wearable computing devices. That's kind of cool. Goes on to say, Apple's hired an expert in human-computer interaction for mobile applications to complement its research and development in mobile computing. Richard Duvall, known for his work in the field of wearable computing, is Apple's newest senior prototype scientist. Very, very cool stuff. All right, this is an article that just can make you shake your head. Independent filmmaker Dave Hoffman set out to do a documentary on Sputnik. Now, of course, Sputnik was the small satellite the Soviets launched in the 1950s and put in orbit around the world, which made really the space race really kick off and get started and led to us putting a man on the moon. And he went out and collected every type of material he could find, newspaper articles, old film clips, stuff on eBay. He went around all over the place to make this documentary. And when he submitted the film for copyright rights, in other words, we had to go through the different groups that own the copyright to this material. And, you know, here it is. He's spent months and months and months in putting this together. They are trying to charge him $320,000 for clearing the rights to using this material that was basically put together in the 50s and 60s. In the press package accompanying the film's release in 2008, Hoffman discussed his new documentary style that embraces a timeless feel of black and white footage while staying true to the soundtrack of that era. Few talking heads hear just lots of original footage. And he felt that the right holders charged outrageous amounts of money for their old news clips, especially after he had located them all. He said the real challenge was diligently tracking the footage made from Middle Eastern, European, and Russian underground sources. He said once that was underway, we then went to secure the rights by contacting a few people, eventually paying through the nose, and essentially, he ended up having to put up a total of $650,000 to clear the entire film rights. It's crazy. Just amazing. The film was picked up by the History Channel for $200,000, and he didn't even get his initial investment back for content that was created in the 50s and 60s. Is that nuts? $320,000 is the initial cost to clear the rights. I just think it's ridiculous. China's warned Google partners as sensor results leak through. I guess China is warning Google's partners that Google's decision to ditch censorship in the country, it will not be tolerated. And it appears that Google may have started to loosen the ties on the censorship of search results. So we'll see how this develops over the next couple of days. But the first reports coming in that that Google has started to open up a little bit. So we'll see where this goes over the next few weeks. Those of you that are BlackBerry users, 40% of you are saying that you're willing to trade in your BlackBerry for an iPhone. So those of you that are listening to the show that have a BlackBerry, why would you turn in your BlackBerry for an iPhone? Why would you make the switch? Are you forced to keep your BlackBerry because of maybe your business or those that you work with? You're on that. Okay, let me go ahead here. And I've got one voicemail to go into and a bunch of email to catch you always up on. So let me go ahead and play the voicemail, and then we'll get into the email comments here. So here we go on the voicemail.
Hey, Todd, it's Clint calling from Houston.
Hey, Clint.
How's it going tonight?
Good.
It is the evening of March 15th, and I have not seen another installation of your wonderful Geek News Central podcast on iTunes through my iPhone. Anyway, I guess you were probably crazy busy with South by Southwest, and sure, it's been very productive and very fun, but listen, some of us out here are having withdrawals from your awesome podcast. So, hope all things are going well in Austin, and do you think you'll be able to head down the road to Houston for a day or so? If so, give me a call. I'm going to pause and leave my phone number at the very end so you can then blank it out.
Hey, Clint. I've left the great state of Texas, and now I'm in California. I had sent out a email blast to those that are subscribed to the newsletter on Thursday, basically saying that there would be no show and letting everyone know. So that's, and also posted something up on the website. So get subscribed to the newsletter if you're not already. That's where I made the announcement that there would be no show and on Thursday, and I basically explained that at the beginning of the podcast tonight. But don't worry, I don't do that very often, and hopefully there will not be a missed show for a long time again. But it was just one of those situations, perfect storm of me, and it didn't make any sense doing a show where I would be yawning on you every 2 minutes and probably not talking coherently. And I've done that in the past and vowed not to do that again when the situation arose, and it did last week. But thanks for the concern, and I know that you needed your geek fix, and one of these days I'll be able to make it down to Houston and for a meetup. That's, the problem with Texas. It's so big. You guys are so far in between everything. It takes forever to get from one point to the other. It's just a huge state, as we all well know. All right, let me go ahead and get into the email. This email here, the first email I'm going to read from Terrence, is one that I wasn't able to read on the last show that I promised to come back to. And he says, "Hey, Todd, I'd like to throw my 2 cents regarding ads on sites such as yours and Ars Technica. It's probably given that most people choose to block ads because they just don't want to see them. Historically, advertisers have gone to ridiculous lengths to get their ads viewed, including pop-ups, flashing banners, and flash content that obscures the content that they were there to view. I use AdBlock along with NoScript for the same reason, but more importantly, for security purposes. Almost without exception, every new browser vulnerability is exploited through JavaScript, and the recommended precaution is always to disable JavaScript. Most ads load by JavaScript, and more often than not, use it to load flash-based ads, which use extra CPU cycles to render. As an IT professional, aka IT Nazi with a smiley, he says, I spent more time than I can begin to count cleaning up malware infections that people picked up from exploited ads on the sites they trusted. It hasn't been that long ago that a compromised ad server was serving up malicious content on the New York Times website. While I trust sites like yours and Ars Technica, the trust does not extend to ad serving hosts. On your site, I saw a raw voice which displays the GoDaddy banner. That's fine, it's not overly obnoxious, and I have a level of trust with GoDaddy. I purchased hosting and several domain names from them using your codes. On ours, I see two or three additional sites that want to load JavaScript, presumably to load ads. Ours is a trusted site, but what is the vetting process for whomever they have contracted to serve the ads on their site? I have mixed feelings about the stunt ours pulled over the weekend. While I understand their need for ad-based revenue, the cost of $50 per year for an ad-free subscription is not worth it to me. The 40 of the comments it produced is the most I've seen. I think there was about 4,000 comments on there. But anyway, the 40 of comments it produced is the most I remember seeing there in years. If they wanted feedback, they certainly got it. I generally tell people they have two options for safe internet browsing on a Windows PC. Either use a non-administrator account used just for browsing or selectively block JavaScript. Most people don't want to go to the hassle of setting up and using a separate account for just for browsing. That pretty much leaves ad and JavaScript blocking. While UAC and Windows and Vista and 7 has an extra layer of security to keep unwanted software from loading, many people still use XP from an administrator account and likely using IE6. In the end, while I understand the needs of content providers being reimbursed, I absolutely will not enable JavaScript for ad sites such as DoubleClick, TradePub, and Teletext. Add to this, etc., until there's some kind of vetting process and place to provide the right ability of the content. Thanks and keep up the great show. TM Brown. And you know, Terrence, I think that I understand your point for sure. One thing to remember, what we see at GNC at least, is about 99% of the people have JavaScript enabled. I see very few browsers that actually have it disabled. Now, I'm not saying that they're blocking JavaScript, but they definitely have it enabled in their browser. So, you know, disabling JavaScript really, and I understand the issue there, but as long as you're being careful and not going to a lot of new sites, I think you're relatively safe. But I understand your concern. And so far as the Raw Voice ad server, we use a pretty popular ad serving software, and I guess we're the only ones that are in control of that box, so we know what's being put in there. You know, got to have a way to track it for sure. So that's one of the reasons for it as well. All right, let me go ahead and move up here to email from Trucker Tom. Use advertisers spend more on digital than print? Well, boy, I tell you, Trucker Tom, I can't wait for them to figure out this great medium known as podcasting and jump on the bandwagon here a little more. But it's saying U.S. companies will spend more this year on digital and online advertising marketing and on print for the first time ever. A release that was put out last Monday. I know some of this may be old news to you guys, but because we missed Monday's show, last Thursday's show, then some of this is a little bit old. Another email from Trucker Tom talks about the U.S. considering some free wireless and broadband service. Of course, this was announced. The real deal was announced today by the FCC. I'll have that linked up in the show notes. A Belgian newspaper issues 3D edition. A Belgian newspaper offered its readers a new perspective on the world Tuesday with a 3D edition complete with special glasses. So I have a link up to this. That's pretty cool. Greg, again, once again, apologize for no meetup on last week. And we'll make up that, too, when I get into Texas again. Got an email from Jordan saying, hey, Todd, you can order that Canon lens travel mug that you talked about from the Olympics. You guys remember that Olympic swag that Canon was giving out? Well, now you can do the you can order that thing. But it's sold out. I mean, really quick. So I don't know if they're going to make that available again or not. Got an email here from Colin. He said, hey, Todd, here's the latest development in Microsoft's I4I $290 million world patent infringement. Quick ground, Microsoft is trying many methods to appeal a $290 million patent infringement award that the courts have given to I4I ruling. Microsoft willingly, excuse me, and this is coming from a press person, Microsoft willingly infringed on the I4I XML patent. And I guess what's happened here, a panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Court issued a reverse opinion in I4I versus Microsoft, which affirms the August 11, 2009 final judgment and found that Microsoft had infringed on I4I's U.S. patent. And I guess the I4I owner says that the appeals court has again upheld the lower court decision And we'll see what happens with this. But apparently this is still moving through the court process. And Microsoft has chalked up, it looks like, another loss on this. Got an email from Frank. He said, hey, you asked your latest podcast how many of your listeners are moving their personal documents to the web. He says, I can see, for example, how Google Doc could be very useful to your company to enable sharing documents without having to mess with VNCs. It's useful when and only when it serves a purpose. For personal stuff, what the heck is the point? What would storing, say, a copy of a letter to my mortgage company or a credit card company, including my account number in the cloud, do for me? Nothing good, and personally, something very, very bad. So he says, I think the cloud appeals primarily to the you can do it on the internet, therefore you should and must do it on the internet crowd. Thanks for that feedback, Frank. Got an email from Mika talking about how Foursquare's latest update has broke, is no longer usability. It breaks access for blind users and underscores the need for change in the IT industry. And I think some of that's going to be addressed in HTML5. Don't know how that's going to help with the apps for sure. Got an email from Nier. He says, hey, Todd, I activated SMS services in Gmail. It appears to work well, and strangely, it is currently available in the United States, Ghana, and Israel. In Israel, it only works with 2 of the 4 cellular providers that we have. Does anyone know why Google started this service in these countries and not others? Are other countries in the plan? Which countries? Nier. So this is SMS capability in USA, in the United States, Ghana, of all places, and Israel. So anyone else in another country have the SMS service from Gmail enabled? GoDaddy has announced on March 10th that their portfolio supports 40 million domain names. And that's pretty huge. Congratulations for GoDaddy for hitting 40 million domain names. I know I have 200 and some of them. How many do you have? Does anybody have more than me that listen to the show? I think I've got 232. Yes, call me a purveyor of domain names. Got an email from, is this a PR? No, this is one of our listeners. Hey, Todd, I did a double take when I saw your name. Oh, maybe it's not. No, this is from a PR person. We'll skip this one. Got an email from Andy. He says, hey, I really like your podcast. I really like your podcasting do-it-yourself book. Very informative. I'm eager to get my show going and rely on your info for the best info, and it's credible. I retain most of the information as far as the technical aspect. I have a couple of questions. As of now, all I need is a mixer. I have a mic, PC, M audio interface, just the fast track USB with only one cable jack for a mic input, and guitar or other mic input, monitor, headphones, software called ePodcast Producer. Was wondering if you had any comment about Podcast Studio Firewire from Behringer. Have you heard of it? I have not heard of Studio Firewire from Behringer. Don't have any background on that. I do know that much of the stuff that Behringer makes is not bad, but at the same point, it's not great. It's a great price, I know that. So I would test it. If you can go someplace like a Guitar Center or something where they have one and you can listen to it through headphones, I think that's important. He goes on to say, also, I'm looking to do some live recording with a guest. I was wondering what I need to look for an appropriate mixer and interface. If you can tell me if that Behringer product is sufficient to my needs, I just need your input, literally. Like your show, very informed, by the way. Thank you for your time. Andy, I don't know if you're using a Mac or a PC. There's some better ways to record Skype interviews. I would recommend, because I have a separate system, my system is not normally what people would want to implement. What I would do is, of course, you don't say that you're doing it with a guest over Skype. Let me read this again. Okay. Really, what you're going to need, if you're going to have a guest that you're going to do live recordings with, then you're going to need at least a 2-channel device, a mixer or one with a FireWire interface, where you can plug at least 2 microphones into it. There can be a little bit of a challenge in getting 2 headphone jacks, so you may need a splitter to do that. But if you're just getting started, don't spend a lot of money. Spend as little money as you can. And but you're definitely going to need something that can do at least two channels if you're going to have a guest. I guess I need to know if you've got a Mac or a PC. If you've got a Mac, you definitely want to go FireWire. I don't recommend doing an analog input to a Mac. With a PC, it really doesn't matter. You can go analog or FireWire input. But I think if that podcast studio FireWire from Behringer has two channels, you're probably okay. I hope that answers your question. Maybe someone from the audience has some additional feedback or know about that particular device. Got an email from Frank. Songbirds shrinking due to warming climates. This indicates a trend which is not reversed by an isolated cold snap. He's got a link up here to information from the BBC. And as a matter of fact, there was some good, actually saw something on CNN the other night that was talking about how newscasters are starting to shy away from some of the global warming controversy, basically because of scientists have not being completely honest with everyone with this, you know, these latest go-rounds, and how the press is kind of staying away from the global warming discussion right now. So I don't know if that's going to continue or just a trend, but it is kind of curious to see what's happening in the press. Got one more email from Trucker Tom. He says, hand germs could join fingerprints DNA in forensic labs. Forensic scientists could soon use hand germs to help identify criminals and victims, a study said Monday. I have a link up to this in the show notes. So I know I went through the email here quick, and some of it was basically disjointed, and I had a trouble getting through it all. But thanks, everyone, for your feedback, and I hope I got everyone the answers they need. Good time to get the show wrapped up here. It's 10 o'clock local here in California. But be back with you on Thursday, probably around 8 p.m. We'll start Pacific Standard Time. If you want to come join the Ustream, for those of you that are downloading the show, hey, thanks for staying subscribed, being part of the Ohana. And those of you new to the show, thanks for hanging out to the end here. And this is what this show is all about an hour and 15 minutes twice a week. And it's been my pleasure to bring it to you. And again, everyone take care, and we'll see you on the next go-round. And those of you on Ustream, I'll hang out here for a little bit. Aloha.